Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Ella Jean Ehrlich.
I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
I'm Rosie.
This is Martina Navratilova.
This is Mark Forbes.
I'm Andy Murray.
That's Rosie G, not Rosie the dog.
You're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport, and introduced there by a sample of our Kickstarter backers from 2016 campaign, but which funded the podcast throughout 2017, and we're very grateful that that was able to happen. I'm Catherine Whittaker, joined by David Law, and we just want to say, David, don't mean to start with, and we will be talking about actual tennis matters on this one. It won't be entirely Kickstarter dominated, but we can't move on to tennis matters without explaining how overwhelmed and stunned we are once again by the support we've received from you lot.
Yeah, well, first of all, we can't really do this without some help, and that's what we asked for, and my word, have you lot given it, because we set ourselves two goals. One, to fund the weekly show, which we met in 4 days. We had 43 days to do it in, and we did it in four, thanks to the generous backing of all of yourselves. Yeah, I must admit, when we set this sort of thing up, and when we do the podcast, there is a moment where Catherine and I are sitting in this unnamed coffee shop in the Putney Exchange, and I'm genuinely thinking, is anybody other than the people in the queue to my right actually listening to this? And it turns out there are. And it turns out that, well, many people seem to want it to come back. So, you know, at the very least, the weekly show will be back in 2018. We still have some Kickstarter backing to get in order to meet our Grand Slam Daily Show's target, which is there for you to back on Kickstarter.com. Just search for Tennis Podcast or follow the links on our Tennis Podcast Twitter or Facebook pages. And, you know, hopefully we'll make that target before the Australian Open.
Yeah, and the rewards categories aren't there as well. And I think we should, in the context of awards categories, there is, of course, there's one level of contribution where you're guaranteed to have your name in the opening titles for the Tennis Podcast, as you've heard in today's episode. You can enter our predictions competition and, well, I'm afraid this category has been snapped up because it was a it was a unique category, and it was snapped up within a matter of hours, and the category was to have a pet of your choice be the Tennis Podcast mascot for 2018. And I feel like we should mention a certain Mr. Charlie the ferret, although I don't think Charlie stumped up the funds himself.
Well,
I think
that's
probably his mum should get the mention.
Yes, I hear they have a joint bank account. But anyway, Charlie is very much our Tennis Podcast mascot for 2018, and we are absolutely delighted about that and very, very grateful for the contribution as well to his mum.
And in terms of the predictions categories, we have a winner of the 2017 predictions competition. It is not either of us.
No.
It is a human being.
Although
though.
I did
It would
win.
Have been a bit awkward if Rosie the dog had won, because one of the prizes, of course, is to come along to our Christmas do later on today, which Melanie Bowes will be doing. More on that later. But predictions news for 2018, David, drum roll please.
Yeah, well, we already have a number of people who've entered, and you can too.
And
if
they're,
you
all special.
Like, they're all special.
In their own way.
But we also have a Grand Slam semi-finalist from the Australian Open twice in 1992 and 2003, Mr. Wayne Ferreira, who we didn't even know was a listener.
He didn't enter under the name Wayne Ferreira, though, did we? We had to do a little bit of detective work to identify that it was Wayne Ferreira. He was very low-key about it all, wasn't he?
Wasn't he? Yeah, a bit like he was as a player, really.
David sent out an email saying, what name would you like to be entered under? And he sort of said, well, my name is Wayne Ferreira.
Yeah, and I had to say, what, the Wayne Ferreira? Like the one who won Queens in 1992?
So, calling other Grand Slam semi-finalists, David. Yeah. They could have their own little competition amongst themselves, couldn't
exactly.
they? Who is the greatest predictor among Grand Slam semi-finalists? Who is on our target list? I think Henman can chip in and
he can enter. Yevgeny Kafelnikov is a listener.
Yeah?
Let's get him on.
Calling Yevgeny Kafelnikov. Who else have we got that we know tunes in every now and then? Marin Cilic has listened.
Jonas Bjorkman, I think. Yeah. He's a Grand Slam semi-finalist as well.
Absolutely. So there you go. If you're a Grand Slam semi-finalist that hasn't stumped up and entered, what are you doing?
And just imagine, you can beat a Grand Slam semi-finalist at something tennis-related. Pretty cool.
That's a good point, isn't it? That's probably the greatest accolade, tennis-related accolade,
that any of us
are ever likely to achieve. Now then, David.
Who won the internal competition, by the way?
There was no internal competition.
There was.
That was never discussed.
And
that wasn't pre-agreed. The main focus of today's episode is going to be our end-of-year awards, because it is, of course, the off-season, although calling it a season is utterly preposterous because it's about 3.5... It's not even a full month, really, is it?
It's more of an off-season than it's been in recent years because there's no IPTL. And I think that, although that event had some merits, some virtues to it, I think it is very much to the benefit of the game generally that actually this does feel like an off-season. I mean, for a start, I'm pulling my hair out because there's no tennis to talk about live, right? I'm delighted to be sitting here in a coffee shop with you, Catherine, talking about tennis generally. But, you know, we've still got about another 2 weeks to go till the tennis season starts, and that's the whole point, isn't it? We can't wait for it to start.
Getting the chance to miss it, I do think, is important, albeit for a very, very short period relative to other sports. But I do think missing it is important, both for us as fans and for the individual. I think, you know, a bit of time away. And that gets us on to Roger Federer, which we'll leave Federer until the awards categories, because I'm sure he'll pop up once
or
twice.
I was right then about Nick Kyrgios needing a break, wasn't I? And Sloane Stephens and all that sort of thing.
Well, hang on. It remains to be seen with those two. We don't know what's going to happen at the beginning of the year. Anyway, we need to be asking Melanie Bowes what's going to happen in 2018.
Yeah.
Because
she gets everything
right. We need
to
be asking her for the lottery numbers.
That will
be
happening
later. To tell my
fortune.
All of that kind of stuff. Anyway, but even though it is the off-season, there are just a few bits of tennis news to cover that have arisen since our last podcast, the Davis Cup final, a few weeks ago. Now, I don't know whether we can categorise the merry-go-round of gossip surrounding whether or not Serena Williams will participate in the Australian Open 2018 as news, but it is certainly something that the tennis world is absolutely blooming loving speculating about, isn't it?
It's delicious, isn't it, to just ruminate on.
To the extent that I think it is going to be an enormous disappointment now if she doesn't play, because it's already the focus. It's so much the focus of that tournament, her questionable participation.
Right now is a bit like the first day of the new Premier League football season, isn't it? When you still
when
think...
When no one's been sacked.
Yeah, nobody's lost, and you still think your team, your Reading or my West Bromwich Albion can do a Leicester and win it all. I mean, obviously Reading can't because they're not even in the right division. But, you know, at the moment it all seems...
West Brom can't for other reasons, but yeah.
At the moment it all seems so perfect and so exciting because at the moment, as far as we know, Serena Williams and Andy Murray and Novak Djokovic and Stan Wawrinka and Nick Kyrgios and all these people are all coming back. They're all going to be at sudden full fitness. They'll be locking horns with Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer and Grigor Dimitrov, who's finally pulled his socks up, and Alexander Zverev, who's pulled his socks up at the US Open. Oh dear, that was an awful look. And Denis Shapovalov, who's made it all so exciting. At the moment, that's how it seems to us on the 18th of December. But in about 2 weeks' time, probably two of them will have pulled out.
The best thing for me about the Serena Williams speculation is that Serena Williams seems to be enjoying it as much as anyone and is fueling it furiously. I love that, because one of the biggest pieces of evidence that we have, and there is evidence to the contrary as well, but one of the biggest pieces of evidence that she will play is a photo that she put on social media this week of some sparkly trainers.
Gold and white trainers, which sneakers, if you're in the United States,
yeah.
Which were on tennis courts and had her feet in them, it looked
and
like.
And had the tagline ready or something, no, or coming soon.
It said excited.
Excited, there
so
we go.
So excited, or, yeah. or something of that ilk. And well, you know, I think that was a fantastic... I just don't think you would do that unless you plan to come back.
However, so I should, for balance, state the evidence to the contrary. She is confirmed, has been announced for a speaking engagement in the States, bang smack in the middle of the Australian Open. That was reported by Ben Rothenberg of Rival Twitter, of Rival Podcast Parishes earlier this week, and he also pointed out that was the first piece of evidence in the puzzle that Serena Williams would be disappearing from the tennis landscape for a while, because she signed up for, before she had announced her pregnancy, it was noticed that she had committed to a speaking engagement in America in May, bang smack in the middle of Rome, and that made a few people raise some eyebrows. So she's got previous with speaking engagement,
yeah,
commitments.
Video conferencing can
come
work,
on.
Can't it?
You think she's going to be video conferencing in the middle of an Australian Open campaign?
Yeah. She could do anything.
Right, night before a quarter final, she's staying up until 4 a.m. or I can't work out the time difference off the top of my head. But
what, you don't think
she
can?
To do it.
I do.
Of course she can.
She could,
it's not ideal, though.
She could carry out the conference call while playing the quarter final, probably.
I don't know. I think,
you know,
that's...
sit downs and all
when
that.
I saw that, my heart... sunk.
No,
I have to say,
it's
you're just an optimist, Dave.
It's
do you think
screen.
So? Are you thinking she's playing?
Well,
are you in the Craig Tiley camp?
Yeah. I'm not quite as bad as Craig, although
Craig, who's put her on the front cover of the programme.
Yeah, I tell you, I think I'm going out
it's
for a night
bold
out
move.
With Craig.
I wonder
Tiley.
If there's a spare edition somewhere.
No, I think...
Do you not think so?
You
don't think they prepared an alternative programme edition without her on the cover?
No, I can't. I don't want my illusions to be shattered, Catherine. Or
nor
those
Craig Tiley.
Of the many people listening to the tennis podcast right now. I think she's coming back at the Australian Open.
Will she play a warm-up event? Or do you think she'll come in cold?
Ooh, I think she will... coming cold.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you think she'll win it?
No.
Where's Melanie when you need her?
Melanie Bowes, tell us what's going to happen.
Do you think she'll come back and not win it? Because there's no way she's coming back unless she's pretty confident she's winning it, right? So you're disagreeing with Serena herself is effectively
well,
what
no,
you're saying.
I don't doubt for a second that she thinks she can win it and will win it. I just don't think she will. Oh,
right.
Crikey, why have I said that?
I don't
that?
Know. I desperately wanted to. As I say, it's been hyped up so much.
It's the story of all the comebacks. This is the one. I mean, you know, we're all excited to know what will happen with Novak Djokovic and Andy Murray and Stan Wawrinka and all these others.
She eclipses all of them.
But she's the most interesting of the lot, obviously.
They have, assuming she does come back, they have been utterly spoiled, the Australian Open, haven't they, in recent years? I mean, last year, to think that... that last year there could be a that after last year there could be a story that could parallel what happened last year with Federer and Nadal and all that
we've been running down as we prepare for the new Grand Slam season. We've been highlighting on social media, our Twitter and Facebook pages, and going through one at a time all of the Grand Slam daily podcasts of last year, starting with the Australian Open. And I've listened to quite a few of those Australian Open ones. You forget just how much happened. Because for a start, you come into that Australian Open with a world number one Andy Murray, which is a great story in itself, and a returning champion in Novak Djokovic. You have them lose quite early on, and yet you still don't end up with a disappointing climax to the tournament. The complete opposite.
Pretty much unheard of,
yeah.
isn't it?
Such a cool event.
The rest of the bits and bobs of tennis news we have to cover before our awards, David, all concern the coaching carousel.
I've got a new one.
I'm about to boggle your mind a bit. I'm just gonna run through all of the major ones. I know there have been more than I'm about to go through, but there are so many names that I'm about to read out. if I've missed any significant ones, then you can and will, I'm quite sure, point that out. So we've got Jo Konta, who is split with Wim Fissett. She described that relationship as having run its course. She, Konta, is now with Michael Joyce, who was formerly with Maria Sharapova until about 2011, and also Victoria Azarenka, who, by the by, has been confirmed as having been awarded a wild card to the Australian Open. Another exciting comeback. We have Naomi Osaka, who has dropped David Taylor. More of that in a moment.
You never and know, now, dear. Have they dropped them? Is it mutual? It's intriguing, isn't it?
And is now with Sasha Bajin, formerly of the Caroline Wozniacki parish. We have Yelena Ostapenko,
who has
teamed up with David Taylor, formerly of the Naomi Osaka parish. We have Donna Vekic, who has teamed up with Torben Belts, formerly of the Angelique Kerber parish. And Angelique Kerber, to complete that little circle from earlier, has employed the services of Wim Fissett, formerly of many parishes, but most recently the Jo Konta parish. Last bit of coaching news on the women's side, Karolina Pliskova is with Thomas Krupa, formerly, who she reportedly stole from the hands of her countrywoman Barbora Strizova. And to complete that little circle, Strizova has now employed the services of David Cortiza, who was formerly with Karolina Pliskova.
And Petra Kvitova
before that. And on the men's side, the biggest headline is probably Novak Djokovic employing the now retired Radek Stepanek. We understand that Andre Agassi is still involved in that team. They're not quite putting a name on his role, but he has been in Monte Carlo with Djokovic and Stepanek, so he certainly is involved. We also have Stan Wawrinka and Magnus Norman splitting up, which I think we reported on our... We have reported, but what we haven't yet reported is the comments, the pretty heartfelt, honest comments from Stan Wawrinka saying he was really upset by Magnus Norman's decision to leave his team.
It was presented as very amicable at the time.
The impression I got that was Wawrinka felt a bit left in the lurch. He said, this is when I need him most, and he's left me. Get the violins out. And we also have, for me, the biggest surprise of them all, Marin Cilic and Jonas Björkman splitting up. I mean, that seemed, of all the amicable, delightful bromances
in tennis, you were quite put out by that, weren't you?
I was. What can possibly have gone wrong?
And that just makes
me doubt that any two human beings can ever coexist in a harmonious way forevermore.
Yeah.
Because it just seemed the most harmonious of relationships.
I think with a lot of these partnerships, when you involve a former player or a super coach, I think you see a lot of them breaking down or ending at the point of how much time can you commit? How much
do you think Jonas has resigned in order to focus his attentions on the Tennis Podcast Predictions Competition, which you'll soon be entering as a former Grand Slam semi-finalist?
I would have thought so. You know, I mean, it does
require
a lot of brain
power. If you read between the lines of the statement, that it's there somewhere.
It's there. One of the coaching change you forgot to mention is how I've stolen your coach ahead of our match. Matthew Whittaker, if you didn't notice, is now joining Team Law.
Is he?
In fact, we are going to have that rematch this next year, 2018.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to happen.
Yeah, he keeps
finally
saying it.
4 years on.
Do you have any either particular? If you've got nothing interesting to say, then you don't need to say anything. It sort of speaks for itself. Well, do you have any particular comments about any of those individual matchups or about the coaching merry-go-round
Most of the coaching alliances in the last 2 or 3 years that we've really focused on have involved super coaches. And there's
not one on that
list.
There's
a real
dearth
of
them. All due respect to Radek Stepanek, you know, a super coach is loosely defined as a...
To me, he's the most interesting one of the lot because of the type of player he was, the way I think his mind works, the way he had to use his brain in order to to get wins because he didn't have the Djokovic-like game.
And he's got a little bit of previous because he sort of had an unofficial mentoring relationship with Nick Kyrgios for a while last season, didn't he? So he's got a bit of previous in that kind of a brotherly, elder, mentor-y sort of role.
I tell you what I think we might find we get a bit more of out of Djokovic with Stepanek joining up. I think we might get a bit of the old... He might help to unearth a bit of the old defiance in Djokovic, because Stepanek has always been a guy who just doesn't care who he upsets. And I think for the last year or so, Djokovic had become a little too mellow, to be honest. I think he was too happy with his lot for the last year. I know, let's not do down his injury. He had what sounded like a really nasty elbow injury as well, and ultimately that's going to play a big part of in his decline. But I think the edge had gone from him. I mean, he said as much himself. Stepanek is such a prickly character. It's somebody I've always liked personally. I've always gotten well with Radek Stepanek, but crikey, does not rub people up the wrong way. He's
and almost delights in it.
Oh, he loves it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it was part of his game plan. You know, if I get under these guys' skin, imagine how much better my chances are. He's not out there to just make friends all the time. And I really mean it. There are players who just... he just drives them wild with the way he behaves on the court, Radek Stepanek. And I just think that he'll be in Djokovic's ear a little bit, and he'll be saying, listen, you know, you were at your best when the whole crowd was against you in Roger Federer's corner, and you just said, come on, then, take you all on. And I think that might work.
What about all these super coaches that have sat on the sidelines now twiddling their thumbs? Do you think... they want to be? Do you think it's been proven to have sort of run its course because they aren't able to commit the sort of time that these players want? Or do you think it's a cyclical thing? Or
yeah.
What's going on?
Interesting one.
Goran's been sat by the phone for 6 months.
They do all appear to have a little bit of a shelf life. They don't seem to be long-lasting partnerships, these sort of things, because these are not career coaches. I think that they come in, they have an immediate effect, and it's usually a sort of intangible one. They make a difference, but maybe even the player doesn't know how to explain what that difference is, because I think a lot of it is between the ears. They've been there and they've done it, and they can just... they can connect with a player and help them over the line. But once that's done, it's kind of been done. And then where else do they go? So they're probably pound for pound very expensive for the short amount of time that they put into the role, some of the very biggest names. And actually, it feels like Agassi is almost the only one that's still around.
Juan Carlos Ferreira and Sasha Zverev has just come to me. We were discussing this before we started recording, trying to think of who's still around as super coaching. Agassi in the very loose role, and Juan Carlos Ferreira with Zverev, but I can't think of any others.
No,
in terms of is Michael, hang on, Michael Chang, Kei Nishikori.
Yeah, it's just that Nishikori's been so inactive of late. It's difficult to know what's going on with him, really.
Yeah, that has all gone a bit quiet. It's really interesting. I don't know whether there are more coaching announcements still to come.
I would have thought the majority of it is done now. And I love all that. You reel them all off. I think it just adds something really interesting to go into the new season with. How much actual difference it makes, I don't know.
It's a very unscientific process, isn't it? One of our categories on the upcoming awards is Coach of the Year, and you don't have the... I've tried to base that on who's been the biggest difference maker. Where would that player otherwise be? What would they otherwise have achieved in the past 12 months were it not for the influence of that person? And that's guesswork. It's
Todd Woodbridge,
total guesswork.
Another friend of the Tennis Podcast who's been a guest of will want to enter when he's heard this. Our predictions competition, because he's a competitive soul. He... immediately upon reading news of Naomi Osaka no longer working with David Taylor, he said, what is it with these players that they... I mean, I dare say Todd knows David Taylor and probably...
Yeah, he worked with Sam Stosur for a long time, didn't he? So.
But he was very quick to say, you know, these players, they just want a sprinkling of stardust or gold dust on them that's going to just make all the difference. And I noticed that when we've spoken to Pat Cash about his coaching relationship with Coco Vandeweghe, he's so quick to pull back from any idea that he can make some miraculous difference just by clicking his fingers. And he was so keen to take attention away from the idea that she can now win a slam or that she should now win a slam. All he was interested in was the day-to-day improvements. Now, ultimately, we'll find out what his career trajectory is like with her in the long run. But I like that idea that even somebody as seasoned as he is and as big a name as he is, has been all the way, isn't just coming along and thinking he can just make some snap verdict on her game and suddenly it all clicks into place. He's all about dealing with every element of her game.
It's marginal gains, isn't it?
Yeah, marginal gains,
and
absolutely.
A coach can be one of a myriad of marginal gains.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Should we move on to our awards? I presume you've prepared some kind of special jingle for these awards, David. Shall I leave a gap to insert jingle, a special end-of-year Tennis Podcast Awards jingle?
Da-da-da, Tennis Podcast Awards 2017.
So, the Tennis Podcast Awards 2017. I'm going to preface this with news that David Law is responsible for devising the awards category, so please direct all feedback, positive or negative, towards at David Law Tennis on the categories. I certainly will be doing so during this
recording.
You've
already given me your feedback, and most of it was scathing.
And you've gone right in there, David. Player of the year, men's and women's, is top.
Who have you got then?
You're supposed to sort of hold that back to the end, like,
well,
sports personality.
I ran a pole vault on this very subject to find out what people thought at Tennis Podcast, and we had a massive response.
We should preface this pole vault news with the fact that you have to provide a shortlist.
Yes, well, I first of all asked who's the player of the year, and lots of people wrote in.
That's the sound of a smoothie being made.
Well, the smoothie maker
in the unnamed coffee shop.
The smoothie maker is trying to get its opinion out there about the player of the year for 2017, the male tennis player of the year. The two players that led it, obviously, were Nadal and Federer. I had to add in David Goffin because your dad thought he should be part of it. And then I also had someone else, who and why. So do you want to know the response? Or do you want to let's just hear what you think first. Who should be player of the year?
No. We're in.
Okay.
Let's get this over with.
Right. Well, Roger Federer's got 56% of the vote.
Unsurprising.
1,136 votes. Rafael Nadal's got 34%. David Goffin, I don't quite know how, has managed 7%. Some people saying, how can Grigor Dimitrov's not in ahead of him, given that he won the end-of-season championships. Then someone else has only got 3%.
Well, I am not going to argue with people that think Roger Federer is the player of the year. I think there is a very strong argument for that. However, I've tried to be scientific as possible about it, because otherwise you're just voting for your favourite player, aren't you? Which
I'm not.
I think it's hard not to. But then if you take being scientific about it to its logical conclusion, you're just going to go with who finished top of the rankings, because that's the most scientific measure of who's had the best year. So I've tried to be scientific about it without being so dull as just to pick the two world number ones. And the best way, which is not logically ideal, but the best way I have been able to find in my limited brain of doing that is by going through the achievements of the year and who has surprised me the most. And for that reason, I've gone for Rafael Nadal, because if you'd said to me precisely 12 months ago which of these things... I should say, I think the shortlist on the men's side is Nadal and Federer, as much as I think Goffin is right to be on the shortlist, and Dimitrov agreed with whoever wrote that on Twitter, should probably be on the shortlist as well. I think you've got to come down to Nadal and Federer. For me, it comes down to 12 months ago, if you'd said which of these two things is more likely, Roger Federer winning the Australian Open and Wimbledon and finishing the year world number two, or Nadal winning Decima French Open and the US Open and finishing the year world number one, I would have said the Federer one was marginally more likely. So for that reason, I've gone for Rafael Nadal, because what he's done this year has astounded me marginally more than what Federer's done.
He's been beaten four times out of four by Roger Federer.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a very strong argument for Roger Federer. As I say, it can't be 100% scientific. I've given you my reasons. I think there are strong counter reasons. That is one of them. But, you know.
You talk about being surprised by Rafael Nadal. Roger Federer couldn't play tennis for 6 months, and he came out and won the Australian Open.
I'm not bruising for a fight here, David.
Put in the counter.
I don't think it's a open and shut case. I'm just saying I have marginally come down on the side of Rafael Nadal. You've gone for Roger Federer, clearly.
I have given it as a joint
award. Oh, for goodness, we're moving on.
No,
women's.
No,
oh, this is ridiculous.
I've given it as a joint award to Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer.
Here is
my reason. You've
made a mockery of the awards, and we're about 2.5 minutes into the award segment of the podcast.
Jonathan Liu, formerly of The Telegraph, wrote a very interesting piece on the Independent website about how it is okay to sit on the fence. And the reason it is okay...
What, in an awards show, it's not?
It is, though, if that is the right answer. Don't have an opinion just to say you've had an opinion. That's what the crux of his piece said. And I think he's right. And I think you can't pick between them. So I'm giving it to both of them.
David Law's new motto is don't have an opinion. And
unless
on that note,
right,
we move on reluctantly to the rest of our categories. Women's Player of the Year, what you got?
Women's Player of the Year, I've gone for Garbiñe Muguruza, the Wimbledon champion, who, although not top of the rankings, I feel, well, I said at the start of the year she would be world number one. I think she should have ended up as the world number one. I actually think that she messed it up.
Should have. The rankings don't lie. What do you mean should
no,
have?
No, I mean, I think she blew it, is what I'm saying. I really do. I think she was in pole position to finish world number one, and she blew it. No, I don't want to take anything away from Simona Halep, and I dare say I am taking something away from her there. But the facts of the matter is that, to me, I feel the slams are important, and she was the highest-ranked player with a slam last year, or in 2017, so she would be my pick.
Again, I've tried to be
have you given it joint
vaguely
between Simona Halep and Garbiñe Muguruza?
Certainly blooming haven't, David. I've tried to think about it as scientifically as possible, because, again, otherwise you're just picking your favourites, and you know, everyone's just going to have a... There's just no right or wrong, or, you know, what's the point? And I've been through the list, and I was, you know, thinking Garbiñe Muguruza for the reasons you said, but then just didn't feel quite right. So I started to think, who has done something this year that nobody else has done? Because we've had four different people winning Grand Slams, and there's four different Grand Slam winners in the women's, yeah. And we've had five different women at world number one. So I was just not able to see the wood for the trees. And then it came to me, Serena Williams won her Grand Slam whilst pregnant. And that's something that no one else has done. As far as we know, it's something no one else has done in history, although we don't know that for sure. We just don't have it confirmed. So for that reason, I've gone for Serena Williams.
Oh, I'm struggling to argue with that one. Yeah, that's quite good. I'm still going Muguruza for the
well,
reasons.
Well, don't have an opinion for the sake of having an opinion, David.
No,
doubles team of the year.
I have no intention to do so. Doubles team of the year has to go to Hingis and Chan for
Hang
me.
Hang on. Well, I thought we were doing men's first, but you're right. Ladies first.
Yeah, well.
Quite right.
I would go with Hingis and Chan for sure. No question about it.
On the women's side for doubles team of the year, I was pretty torn, really, on what I was thinking. Makarova Vesnina, because they won the Wimbledon final 6-love, 6-love, and that's a pretty absurd achievement, isn't it? I mean, but then, for sentimentality, it's the last time she can do it, so I've gone for Hingis and Chan.
Yeah.
Not unsigned. I've completely broken my own rules of scientificness there. But I also think special plaudits to Chan for managing to keep Hingis's planned retirement a secret all year.
Yeah.
I think she gets a little booster of points.
That's good going.
For that. A men's doubles team of the year, David. I have gone for Henry Kontinen and John Peers because I feel so guilty about us not mentioning them on our O2 finals show. We didn't give them a mention. They were extraordinary. They won the title again. They haven't finished the year as the top. I think they finished the year as the second-ranked pair to Kubot and Mello. But nonetheless, I've gone for them out of guilt.
I love the honesty. Well, I'm going for Mello and Kubot because I think you know, they're a Grand Slam title-winning team who finished world number one. And, you know, you can't say fairer than that, can you? So I have to go with them.
Doubles player of the year. This is one that we've not gone for men's and women's individual categories on this. We've just got one doubles player of the year. Who you gone for?
Hingis.
Just for sentimental reasons?
No, she's just the best doubles player on the planet. I mean, she won the mixed doubles titles with Jamie Murray as well. And I think she should go down as one of the all-time great doubles players. Her and Martina Navratilova. I can't think of better doubles players.
Coach, by the way. I don't think she'll be able to stay away.
No,
she's dabbled, hasn't she, with Belinda Bencic. I reckon she will pop up as a coach.
Talking of who?
Soon.
Belinda Bencic has just won her third tournament in a row. I mean, you know, it's
no 18th more season for Belinda.
18th of December, and she's flying.
A comeback from her in 2018 would be very welcome indeed. I've gone for Pierre-Hugues Hébert because he was the best player in the rubber, which decided the Davis Cup final.
And he's also a lovely bloke.
And he's a lovely chap. He's a lovely chap. Match of the year, David.
Well, this is a tough one.
Have you devised a shortlist?
I have got a shortlist. My shortlist of three, stroke four. But no, the three would be Kerber against Muguruza at Wimbledon, Nadal against Dimitrov in the Australian Open, and Kyrgios Federer in Miami. To me, those are standout matches throughout the year, and I'm so torn. I mean, the thing is, all three of them just made me happy to be alive in this era, really. Watching them, just I was bursting out my skin with excitement.
If you're talking your way, as much as I like hearing about you bursting out of your skin, if you're talking your way into a fence sitting, I'm going to cut you off here and now.
No, when have I ever done that? No, I'm not, actually. What am I saying? I think I'd have to go Nadal and Dimitrov because they sustained it over five sets and they did it at the Slam. Those two factors, it's so often in a five-set match that you see a real dip in level, and we just didn't in that match. I mean, I think some of the tennis we saw in Kyrgios Federer was the most uplifting of the lot.
That for me was the best men's three-set non-Grand Slam match of the year. I agree with you about Muguruza Kerber. I also had a couple of other women's matches in the shortlist. I had Svitolina Garcia in Beijing, which most people probably didn't see. And certainly nobody in Beijing saw it because it was played at about 4 o'clock in the morning to a completely empty stadium. And that made me so sad because it was one of the best matches of the year, without question. I also have Bouchard Sharapova in Madrid.
Oh, yeah. And that's really the only thing that Bouchard did all year,
yeah,
of any note at all. And she'll be cropping up later in the awards.
And it was extraordinary. But for no reason other than I have a video on my phone of the Eurosport green room in Melbourne during the, I think it's during the fourth set of that Dimitrov-Nadal match, and I won't name drop who was in there, but you know, Mats Wilander was sat there with his jaw was on the floor for most of it. I mean, I've said before, watching Mats Wilander watch tennis is almost better than watching tennis.
Is he not a name drop then?
Oh, he totally is, but anyway, I had to get that in there. And just watching the video of watching people watch that match gave me goosebumps. I'd forgotten I had taken that video, and it gave me goosebumps. So I've gone for that
one. So we're in agreement.
We're in agreement.
How about that?
Newcomer of the year, David. Again, we haven't separated this into men's or women's, so you can have your pick of the full smorgasbord of genders.
Well,
all two of them.
I mean, I think, in many ways, I would go for Ostapenko, but I don't regard her as a newcomer because she was around before. To me,
it has to be somebody we hadn't heard of 12 months ago.
No, but to me, it has to be somebody who has just really announced themselves this year. And to me, that is Shapovalov. I know that he had his match that you covered in Toronto, wasn't it, the year before. But this year, he took over the conversation so many times, and I really didn't expect that. Not that I'm saying that I didn't expect Ostapenko to either, but I, you know, she had been playing in events that I'd commentated on before that. She will appear in my awards, but yeah, definitely for me, Shapovalov.
Well, I've gone for Ostapenko.
Okay, well, Ostapenko.
Yeah, she was around, but we hadn't talked about her on the podcast, David. And that, I mean, and that's really the marker of success, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, frankly.
The degree to which you get talked about on this podcast.
You don't exist if you don't.
Yeah.
Really.
I mean, she won a flipping Grand Slam title, and there is not one person on the planet, not even Melanie Bowes, who was predicting that would happen a year ago. So
yeah, I've seen what she picked.
I've gone for Ostapenko. But moving swiftly on to most improved player of the year, I've gone for Denis Shapovalov.
Ostapenko for me. Okay. Because I could not have imagined a player at the level that I'd seen her play at for basically 2 years coming out and producing anything like she did at that French Open. It was so inspiring to watch the way she performed at that French Open. It was, as you say, it was the one of the most shocking runs that I've ever seen to a title. That was Becker-like. That's how much out of the blue it felt like.
Yeah, I mean, those two categories do go sort of arm in arm, don't they? They are, again, feedback on categories goes to @DavidLordTennis.
I did take a hammering on them, you'll be pleased to know.
Now then, I suspect there could be some fervent debate over the next one. Although without further ado, comeback player of the year, David. Did you do a pole vault on this?
I can't remember. Lots of people got confused because lots of people are saying matches.
Right, which is a separate category, I should say.
Which is why I opened that category immediately. Right. But no, comeback player of the year for me. I mean, I think you could go for Bencic, who we've just been talking about, who's been out all year. There's so many you could go for. You could go for Nadal, you could go for Sloane Stephens, you could go for Roger Federer, but surely it has to be Petra Kvitova. Just the fact that she's even playing the sport is just a miracle, really.
I agree. When I first saw Comeback Player of the Year, I sort of idly, without thinking, wrote Federer and then stopped myself in my tracks and chastised myself.
So you should.
Because, of course, it's Petra Kvitova. What we've discussed at length what she went through and how horrific it is and how horrific it continues to be. I think to sort of talk about her as someone whose comeback is done and over, you know, this is something that will be with her for the rest of her career, that she...
Well, it's miraculous that she's managed to come back this quickly to the level she has.
Yeah, we're talking about someone that's... You know, she's done an interview this week where she's talked about her new hand. You know, she is, it's not about getting back to where she was or being the player that she was. She's a new person now and a new tennis player. She's had to build herself as something different. We're talking about a player that I know she hasn't used these words, but she had a panic attack on the court at Wimbledon this year against Madison Brengel. She's living with this every day, and she is extraordinary. So, sorry, Roger.
Yeah.
I think he would be okay with losing out.
Probably.
Comeback in a match of the year, which is a cumbersome category title.
Just come off it. That's a good one, Matt.
Comeback in a match of the year.
That solved a problem for me, that did.
Now, I am torn here. I think there's a very clear men's winner here, and I think there's a very clear women's winner.
Well, one or two people have gone for Halep against Svitolina. I think Halep was 5-1 down in the third set at the French Open and ended up winning. Obviously, there is the one a couple of rounds later when she was leading that French Open final by a set and 3-love, and Ostapenko came back and won the title.
Which I think you have to give a strong shout to that because of the significance of it.
Regis Corblin is saying sock against Edmund when he was 5-1 or 5-love down and ended up winning the title in Paris and getting to the O2. But countless people have gone with the other one. Which
the thing is, I think a men's match is always going to win this because coming from two sets to love down is something that the women are restricted from doing at the moment.
Vicky Sampson, David White, Yvonne Raptis, Stephen Malloy, they've all gone with Delpo coming back from two sets to love down against Dominic Thiem.
And the Lurgy.
And, I mean, the drama.
Yeah, my only regret from that particularly sensational comeback is I think I ended up not directly from the man himself, but catching that Juan Martín Del Potro Lurgy, which ended up doing the rounds due to his continued presence in the tournament. So
he did particularly well to get through that match, considering, didn't he, given the fact that you missed about three shows. And
I couldn't see straight. I was an absolute disaster, yeah. So well done, Del Potro. Coach of the year, David.
Well, there are so many different candidates, and actually, I have to be perfectly honest here. I made my selection after putting three names up for a pole vault and being asked by the person herself why she wasn't in it, which I absolutely loved, because my pole vault said Darren Cahill, Carlos Moya, and Ivan Ljubicic. So Cahill coaching Halep to world number one, obviously fantastic achievement. Ljubicic being part of the Roger Federer coaching team, and I do feel he had a tangible impact, particularly on the backhand side. There are noticeable before and after feels to the impact he had. Carlos Moya with Rafael Nadal, I really think he's made a big difference. It's one of those that's so difficult to measure other than looking at the results, really, isn't it? And getting a feel for what you think they might have offered. I had a response to that from Annabelle Medina, who did those sort of starey eye emojis back at me, as if to say, how come I'm not in this? Well, of course, Annabelle Medina Garrigues was the coach of Yelena Ostapenko when she won the French Open. And it did make me think, first of all, yes, she should be part of this pole vault. And secondly, she's my selection. And it's not just because she's shamed me into thinking that, but it did remind me that when commentating on Ostapenko's matches, the way she was able to deal with Ostapenko in difficult moments, in on-court coaching, you know, the impact she was having, how calm she was, how considered and how sensible the strategy seemed to be and the difference it seemed to make. And look, the results are there for all to say. The woman winner of Grand Slam title. She didn't do that all on her own. So for me, Coach of the Year, Annabelle Medina Garrigues, who is now the Fed Cup captain of Spain.
Yeah, she certainly deserves to be in the shortlist. All of those you mentioned should be, and I particularly appreciate what's so difficult about coaching is attempts to be scientific about it are almost futile because you need the control sample of what they would have done without that coach. It's impossible to quantify the difference that coach makes, and I like the Ljubicic thing where you've had Roger Federer say very specifically, you've got the tangible result of the backhand. Ivan told me that I could be more aggressive on the backhand, particularly on the return. So I was favouring him, but in the end, I have gone for Darren Cahill because I see the difference that he makes to Simona Halep. I think if on-court coaching were allowed in the slams, again, this is pure speculation, not massively scientific, but I think were it allowed in the slams, she probably would have won one by now. I don't think it's an accident that the only thing missing from her resume is a Grand Slam title, and on-court coaching is not permitted for the women at slams, or for the men, of course. I think the bravery of his stance earlier in the year to split working with her and to let her ruminate on that for a while and pledge to come back with a renewed attitude. I have a lot of time for that. And for me, the difference that he makes is the most palpable of any coach. Now, that's probably doing a disservice to loads of coaches whose difference being made is, you know, more quiet and behind the scenes. I think Danny Valverde should be on the short list as well. But I can
Severin Luthi.
Yeah, they all should. But look, I can see the difference he makes. I can see the player that Halep is with and without him, and that speaks volumes for what a coach he is.
Yeah, fair. Okay.
Meltdown of the year, David.
It's one of those that I sort of put in, and it's a silly category, isn't it, really? But it's one I've typically put in as a bit of comedy value for my own amusement when I've seen somebody slam their racket into smithereens a number of times and things like that, which I do find quite amusing and enjoyable. But there's also a slightly sinister side to that category as well. And if we're going to say worst meltdown of the year, then it would be Fabio Fognini for me, whose despicable behaviour at the US Open, nigh on got him kicked out of the event, and the way he abused an umpire, and that sort of thing just shouldn't be happening. That isn't funny. It's not. There's no upside to that whatsoever. I also think another meltdown of the year for me would be a slow, lingering one of Kristina Mladenovic, who's just gradually faded away as the season has gone on. I mean, I hope she can come back re-energised, but I think she lost something like 12 matches in a row at the end of the year in the end.
Unbelievable, and finished the second ranked French woman.
Yeah, so it shows how good she was in the first half.
Absolutely. I'm certainly not going to be arguing with anything that you said about Fabio Fognini, so we'll consider that set in stone, shall we?
Yeah, I think I might remove meltdown of the year next year.
Goosebumps moment of the year, David. Now, I feel like, again, we've got two here that go hand in hand. We've got goosebumps moment of the year and tears-inducing moment of the year. So goosebumps first. David gets goosebumps just sitting down in Costa Coffee to talk about tennis. So
yeah, I do get quite excited.
So, what he's going to pick is his favourite.
There's quite a few here. Rosanna Ball and Anne-Marie Batson both say Lopez winning the title at Queens, which was an incredible moment for him, wasn't it? Because, you know, it was just a life-affirming moment for him. That was a career definer. And incidentally, he's another little story of the last few weeks, in that he's now the tournament director of the Madrid Open from 2019. He's going to be assistant tournament director next year. Somebody here, Daniel, has said Kvitova against Venus in the final set recently. The fifth set of the Australian Open. Says Dougal Williams. Ostapenko winning the French Open. Mike Tomlinson says La Decima. Yavedan Kakaria says I would probably go ultimately for one or two of the results that Federer produced, particularly during the Australian Open. I think when he beat Thomas Burdick with tennis that was making me laugh, that it was so absurd in its brilliance, that was the moment that I thought, hold on a minute, he's not finished,
he's still going to take our breath away.
Yeah,
predictive. I would agree with you. I remember we recorded our daily podcast that night on the hill in front of a big screen where lots of people watch, and every single person stood stock still watching the screen to see his reaction to that match and that performance. And usually they're all scurrying for the exits. It, you know, it was probably, what, 11 or 12 at night by that point. And that, I think we both had goosebumps in that moment. So, I mean, you'd probably have to go for the final against Nadal, wouldn't you, in the winning moment. But because there was a Hawkeye challenge on match point, the actual moment of his winning, the whole match was goosebump inducing, but that actual moment wasn't quite as goosebump inducing as it could have been, which is a shame, one of those things. And of course, Muguruza Venus was... Wimbledon has decided on a Hawkeye challenge as well. So yeah, I think maybe that Burdick match and the moments thereafter, I'll give you that one, David.
Yes.
Because we experienced it together, and it was quite something, wasn't it? I mean, we can only go with what gave us goosebumps, I suppose. Now, tears-inducing moment of the year, other than every match I've watched with PMT, what can we go for?
Well, you tell me.
Well, I can tell you what I've gone for. I've gone for two involving the same man, or two matches involving the same man. I mean, my overall winner, and I almost don't want to dwell on this because it will probably make me cry, is a match I reported and commentated on for Five Live at Wimbledon involving Steve Johnson and Marin Cilic, and it was two sets of love and a breakdown with Steve Johnson, I think in the third round, and he sat down, of course, only, what, at this stage it would have been six weeks probably after the death of his father, who was also his coach and was the reason he was playing tennis, and he sat down at the change of ends, put a towel over his head and sobbed. He was completely overcome, and I was completely overcome. I cried in the commentary box. So the very definition of a tears-inducing moment. The other tear-inducing moment from the same tournament was seeing Marin Cilic cry in the final, knowing that circumstances entirely outside of his control were preventing him from giving his best effort in the biggest moment of his life. That was tough. I mean, still eclipsed by Steve Johnson, but that was tough.
I think another one for me would be Lucic Baroni at the Australian Open, when after all she'd been through, her life was finally given its full circle, its meaning in many ways, when she reached the semi-finals of the Australian Open, and you know, more than a decade after she'd first been to a slam semi, and that really moved me immensely. But you're right, there have been a lot of them for positives and negative reasons.
Yeah, probably every match in the immediate aftermath of Petra Kvitova's comeback was pretty emotional, wasn't it? From the positive to the negative, most disappointing player of the year. Given that you've put this category in, you are not allowed to fence it here. Yeah. I want you to damn someone.
Well, you know, I've just had one come to me, which I find quite hard to say in a way. But I think maybe Dan Evans, in a way, because he'd finally cracked it. He finally cracked it. And I think back to a year ago when we went into the Australian Open and he got to the fourth round. I was listening back, as I said, to those podcasts of last year, and how uplifting his tennis was and how great it was to see somebody you always hoped would do well. Particularly, I mean, I thought he's from my neck of the woods, and he cracked it. He could be a tennis player for the rest of his...
Well, his victory also over Marin Cilic is a running theme here of Cilic, but... That was a goosebump-inducing moment.
And I like Dan, but he blew it, I'm afraid. And I hope he,
for his sake
that he makes a comeback and he can make a go of it. But you know, I find that a real shame, and it's all his own fault, and it's just the way it is. So, I think the other one for me would be Eugenie Bouchard, who I just feel I don't know what she's doing with her career. She's
just
throwing
it away. That's not unique to 2017, is it?
No, but you saw what she could do in that match against Maria Sharapova.
She's a weird one, isn't she? Because she posts a lot of stuff on social media, a lot of training photos. If you just look at her social media, I know she posts a lot of other stuff as well, which I try and block out. But if you just look at her social media, you get the impression of somebody that is taking her tennis seriously, that does have an appetite for it. But then, given the level of talent and ability we know she has, can she be? I don't know. Just something doesn't compute with what's happened to Jeannie Bouchard in the last 2 to 3 years. I'm afraid I've gone for Andy Murray. Not that he personally has disappointed me, but what has happened to him this year has been immensely disappointing, well, without question. And this time last year, it was... I mean, everything he had done, you know, watching him win Sports Personality of the Year was goosebump and tear-inducing. And if you told him what was going to happen in 2017, it would have, well, more than tough to swallow. It would have been gut-wrenching, and it has been a gut-wrenching year, really. And I think all the more so because the future still feels so uncertain for him. I mean, with Djokovic, as you said about, he's had that injury, but the impression that we're getting is that at least physically he will be able to come back and make a good fist of it. Andy Murray might well be able to do that as well, but it is still very much an unknown. There's a question mark there, and that's immensely disappointing. Surprise of the year.
Surprise of the year. Crikey. Well... I subtitled this, or I gave this a subtitle of What Gobsmacks You the Most. Nice bit of brummy there.
I don't think gobsmacks is a verb, but anyway.
Susie says,
just so you know, David, I accidentally scrolled past this when I was inserting my answers. So what you say goes.
Right, okay.
I don't have an
answer.
Susie
says Murray's loss to Misha Zverev. It was a bit of a shock, that one.
Was it bigger than Istomin Djokovic, though? No,
probably not. Jack Sock making the year-end finals, says Ali. Novak's fall-off, says Dorian.
Was it Donskoy beating Federer? There we go. I'll go for that.
I would say...
Come on.
I think Tanya is on to one here. Sloane Stephens winning the US Open. I mean, Yelena Ostapenko is another one, I think. But either one of those, you could look at them and say, really? Really? Did that happen? I mean... I almost feel like more so with Stevens now, because she's done absolutely nothing to back it up. It's just this suspended result in the middle of nowhere in her career, and there's nothing before or since, really. Obviously, she had the awful injury, so she's had a terrible time. So I would probably go for, you know, yeah, those two would probably be tied for me as the biggest surprise.
The next category, David, also will be what you says goes, because I abstain in protest. It's called So Bad It's Good, comma, Outfit of the Year.
Yes, it's a terrible award category, isn't it? But yeah, anyway, I would say the only one The two outfits that I really recall of any note actually are not so bad it's good. They're so bad it's still bad.
I should say that when David and I briefly discussed how we were going to do this award show before we started recording, this was the category that David spoke with most passion and venom about. Suddenly there was a look in his eye that scared me.
Well, Alexander Zverev, that outfit he had on at the US Open with the long socks... You know, it was appalling.
But I think we're just not young enough to appreciate it. It wasn't aimed at you, David. I'm afraid to say it.
I could pull that off.
My feeling about that outfit was it would have been fine if he'd won the tournament or reached the final, but it looked pretty silly losing in the second round
to Borna Choric.
Yeah, it ended up looking silly.
Yeah. It did, but I just don't think it worked.
It was an outfit designed for iconic trophy-lifting photos.
And the other one, I'm sorry to say, Roger Federer fans, that shirt he was wearing at the end of the year, that off-white little kind of, I don't know even what it was, little pink number, it was just appalling.
I thought it was fine. I mean, honestly, the She's venom with it. Which David is describing Roger Federer's completely inoffensive end-of-year shirt is a bit alarming. A tennis podcast episode of the year, David. This is a very self-indulgent category. So we'll cover it very quickly. I've gone for the Mary Carrillo episode because I'm a fangirl.
Obviously, me too.
Right, okay. That's that done then. And I'm not even sure I'm going to read out the next two categories. Best prediction of the year and worst prediction of the year.
Well, I mean, let's just look at Melanie's predictions for best prediction of the year, shall we? I would say my Fed Cup and Davis Cup champions and nearly getting Garbiñe Muguruza right.
Honestly, the haste with which David ordered that the final calculations be made for our predictions table when he realised or remembered that at the beginning of the year he'd correctly predicted the Fed and Davis Cup champions. Suddenly emails were going out left, right and centre to our stats guy and our graphic designer. Mock up that table. Mock up. Get it done. We need to release this. The people need to know.
Yeah, well, it catapulted me into fourth place.
I think bottom line, none of us covered ourselves in glory.
It was an appalling year for tennis predictions, wasn't it? Because, I mean, when you start off the year, we've got this on the website, by the way, all of our predictions for the year, at the start of the year. There is nobody who said that Rafael Nadal or Roger Federer would win the Australian Open. Not one person said it out of about 15 of us. Nobody said that they would be anywhere near the top of the rankings at the end of the year. Everybody said Murray and Djokovic would be. We were all wrong.
Because you have to go with the evidence. I mean, we're all just
feeling our way
in the dark, aren't we?
Well, I'm usually pretty good.
But then if you predict something completely nonsensical, like Bernard Tomic reaching quarterfinals of the US Open, you get laughed out of town, which I would have been if I'd predicted Ostapenko to win the French. So you can't do right for doing wrong unless you are Melanie Bowes. And I think Melanie Bowes probably deserves to have the last word in this end-of-season award show. She won 2017. She won 2017. So congratulations, Melanie. We hope you enjoy our end of season Christmas do. And we, David, will be back one more time in 2017 with one final podcast. We have been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. And we'll speak to you soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.